Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm joined by Sheila Carapico, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at American University in Cairo, where she researches the political economy of development with special emphasis on Arab countries. She's the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia, and her forthcoming book is titled Political Aid, Democracy Promotion, and the Paradoxes of Empowerment. She's also a contributing editor to Middle East Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sheila Carapico.
Nice to be with you.
Now, we spoke, of course, during the Egyptian revolution, where you had a front row seat. And I obviously would like to catch up on what's happening with the referendum yesterday in Egypt and what's happening right next door in Libya. But let's turn to your specialty, Yemen. And it does seem that given that the defense minister now vows to stand by President Saleh after 12 senior military commanders have defected from the regime, and now you have the sons, Saleh's son, with the Republican Guards taking up position in the capital with the defecting general, who was apparently close to Saleh, on the other side of town with his tanks. This looks like this place is falling apart.
Indeed, it does. I mean, you know, of course, it's no surprise that the son is taking his Republican Guard and positioning it to defend the presidential palace and the presidential compound, which are, I may add, you know, very large and imposing places. So I think the bigger news is really the defection of this top-ranking general, Ali Muslim. His last name is Al-Ahmar, but he shouldn't be confused with the other family, which has the same name. And he has been, you know, a key element of the administration since Ali Abdullah Saleh has been in power and possibly before. He was a leading commander in the victory of the northern forces against what were then the Southern Secessionists in 1994. He played a crucial role as a commander in the series of campaigns against the al-Houthi rebellion in the far north near the Saudi border in the past few years. And so his defection, which apparently brings with it the 1st Armored Brigade and a substantial contingent of tanks and soldiers, is in fact very significant. I think that although it might be seen as part of this, you know, very significant state of resignations by diplomats and cabinet members and other people who are just horrified and disgusted by the, you know, excessive use of force on Friday, killing, I mean, at least 50 people and injuring, I don't know, several times that many with deliberate gunfire. I mean, it might be seen that Ali Muslim is also appalled by the use of violence, but it might, I think, perhaps more plausibly be seen that he's abandoning a sinking ship. So as your question suggests, I mean, there is some risk. Well, what we can understand now is that there's a rift within the military, and there are at least portions of the armed forces which are now in revolt against the regime. You know, that might be a tipping point towards the protesters, or it might also signify, I mean, a real civil war by some elements of the military against others. So it's very volatile and confusing situation at the moment.
But Sheila Carapico, you can't help noticing a kind of connection here with Mubarak and his sons and Gaddafi and his sons and Saleh and his sons, and the fact that Saleh's been in control of Yemen for 33 years. I think that's pretty much the same tenure as Mubarak. So are we dealing with just bigger forces that are being unleashed in the entire region?
I mean, yes, I think we are. I think what we're seeing, you know, sparked by that, you know, amazing figure in Tunisia who set himself ablaze early this year. I mean, I think what we're seeing is kind of generational shift or, you know, seismic, I don't know, earthquake between, you know, the parental generation who said, okay, well, we don't like it, but this is the way it is, and therefore it's the way it kind of has to be. And then suddenly this, you know, just outpouring of protest from people who are not kids, but who are, say, under 30 or at least under 40, who have just suddenly said enough is enough across the region and, you know, taken to the streets, defying corrupt, capricious military dictatorships.
You mentioned, Sheila Karapiko, the enormous defections from the regime, scores of ambassadors, regional governors, editor of government newspapers, and prominent businessmen have joined the protesters, or at least expressed solidarity, along with this general, by the way, who was mobbed by the students who are leading the protest, General Ali Mohsen Al-Ahmar, who the students apparently first thought that the 1st Armored Brigade was coming rolling in to get them, and now they realize they're protecting them. So there's quite a love fest going on there. Do you think this general is a candidate to take over?
Well, I think more to the point, he thinks so. I mean, he's long been, as I say, I mean, a very, very key member of the ruling clique, the military high command, and was, you know, I mean, widely considered that he was the alternative to the president's son, Ahmed Ali Abdullah Saleh, who, as in Libya and in Egypt, was being groomed to succeed his father. And, you know, Ali Mohsen, the defector, you know, the high-ranking military officer who is an elected brigadier general, I mean, he is not beloved of the people of Yemen. He has a lot of blood on his hands. And it's no surprise that people initially felt that perhaps he was coming to tame the crowd. But, you know, people, I think, were excited, not so much. I mean, what I've seen of commentary from Yemeni suggests that they have kind of mixed feelings about him joining the protests, but at the same time, the fact that he has defected suggests that, you know, the days of the 30-some-year Saleh administration are very much numbered.
Again, I'm speaking with Sheila Karapiko, who is the author of Civil Society in Yemen and chair of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo. But it would seem, though, Sheila Karapiko, that we've pretty much got all our eggs in the Saleh basket in terms of this long-ruling president who is now under siege most of his friends have defected to the demonstrators. It does feel like the writing's on the wall. Do you think the U.S. is again being caught blindsided?
I mean, caught with either bad intelligence or a failure to pay attention to the good intelligence. We have very much, you know, been in the past year and a half in particular, I mean, there's been a geometric increase in American military cooperation with the Yemeni government on the grounds that they are our allies against the so-called AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, you know, who are, I mean, presumably trained and helped a couple of badly bungled efforts to send an airplane bomber to Detroit and some package bombs. And the U.S. has, I think, you know, focused on those. I mean, it's serious, but frankly not successful attacks on American interests and American people. And again, I mean, we want to recognize that, of course, the American government should, you know, try to protect Americans. But I think we have focused on that threat from 200 poorly armed and obviously not terribly effective so-called, you know, terrorists at the expense of paying attention to so many other things going on in Yemen. And so, yeah, we have backed the wrong horse and done so in disregard of standards of human rights and indeed human decency. And unlike in Tunisia and in Egypt and in Libya, where the American government, and I may add also the American media, tended immediately to support or at least sympathize with the demands of the protesters. Okay, the administration maybe was a little bit slow in protesting, in supporting the protesters and demonstrators against Mubarak, but overall, I think American sympathies were with the demonstrators in those three North African countries, and yet in Yemen, we've been very slow to understand that this is also a pro-democracy movement against a corrupt and brutal dictatorship.
And Sheila Carapico, when the dust settles, do you think that there is a possibility of a democratic government here, given that there are divisions between the North and the South and a tribal rebellion in the North, I believe? Whatever government takes over would have its hands full no matter what. So give us a sense then, if you can, of what's likely to follow this dictator who we have placed the wrong bet on.
Well, I mean, until very recently, there were, you know, I mean, so many legitimate grievances against the Sana'a government. In the South and in the far North. And in the South, it's kind of a much more serious mass popular uprising. In the North, it's a little bit, in the far North, the Houthiya rebellion, a little bit kind of more localized and idiosyncratic. And then, you know, there are also legitimate grievances in many other parts of the country. And until recently, those have been very fragmented. So they weren't talking to each other. They weren't finding common cause. And it's only in 2011, perhaps, I mean, almost certainly influenced by events in Tunisia and Egypt, that they found ways of communicating and cooperating and sympathizing mutually, such that what had been separate, fragmentary, localized grievances and protests came together quite recently and to constitute a pro-democracy movement along the lines that we've seen in Tunisia and in Egypt. And, you know, it's always difficult. I mean, it's difficult here in Egypt and in Tunisia, and goodness knows it will be difficult in Libya, depending on how things turn out, to predict that the end of dictatorship would lead seamlessly to democracy. Nonetheless, I don't see any less reason to think that Yemenis are capable of forging a constitutional and reasonable path forward than it is elsewhere in the region. And in some respects, I think Yemen's got as good a chance as any Arab country.
Again, I'm speaking with Sheila Carapico, who is the author of Civil Society in Yemen and chair of the Political Science Department at American University in Cairo. Let's turn, if we can, then to Egypt, to the referendum yesterday, Sheila Carapico. Two questions. One of the candidates, of course, is Musa, who is the head of the Arab League and a candidate for president in Egypt. Let's just deal with his apparent reversal. He said that he didn't quite sign on for what's happening in Libya in the Arab League's call for a no-fly zone, which obviously changed the diplomatic landscape in terms of intervention there. But then he seems to have backtracked on that today. What's your latest understanding of his position?
You know, his decision, I mean, I really have to wonder If you had asked me the question I was expecting, which is more help people in Egypt.
I changed questions on you, but we'll get back to that one.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, I would understand why ordinary, even, you know, literate newspaper readers, much less, you know, illiterate Egyptians, would have heard the no-fly zone as some kind of, I don't know, magic electronic shield that would just ground aircraft so that they couldn't bomb. It's difficult to imagine how Amr Moussa, you know, a very seasoned diplomat, and we all know his name, you know, because he's a prominent international figure, it's difficult to imagine why he didn't understand that a no-fly zone would mean bombing and would mean direct French and British and American intervention. So I can only surmise, and I've never interviewed him or anything, but I can only surmise that he got a little bit confused about his two different audiences. So he thought, on the one hand, that he could, you know, for the Arab public, kind of stand in favor of a no-fly zone, but then he, you know, didn't utilize his, you know, considerable savvy as a world-class diplomat to recognize the real implications of that. So, I mean, I find now that he's kind of waffling and doesn't know which way to go. And I think the larger Egyptian public did support what they thought of as a no-fly zone, but are very confused and conflicted about Western intervention in Libya.
And to the question that I began to ask you, which is the referendum yesterday, how is that shaping up, given that the military still holds the reins of power?
I mean, this is also a very confusing question because, you know, it's possible that the high constitutional court in Egypt would wonder whether the referendum itself was legal, because there is no actual mechanism in the existing constitution for this kind of referendum. I mean, so on the one hand, we have the results of the referendum, which were a resounding yes. We want to amend the existing constitution in the following ways. And I think that although the vote of 77-point-something% was resounding, actually probably the proportion of the voters who would support those particular amendments is even higher than that. But among those who voted no, the concerns are, on the one hand, that it doesn't go far enough, and on the other hand, that it leaves the country in a state of constitutional confusion. And the Egyptian courts and the Egyptian judiciary in general are actually very strong, very professionalized, highly respected. And I don't want to be one to predict that this is actually going to precipitate a kind of constitutional crisis, but I think it might. And it might also create just further ambiguities about the role of the Egyptian military in the currently very uncertain political and constitutional circumstances that we find ourselves in.
Well, just in closing, I know we've gone from Yemen to Egypt, but Libya, of course, next door is a major story. One of the expectations has always been that boots on the ground will be needed because our air power has its limitations in stopping Gaddafi from killing his own people. I take it that the Egyptians have signaled that they're not interested in sending boots on the ground. Is that your understanding?
Yes. And I mean, given what I just said about the uncertainties of the role of the military in Egyptian politics and the possibility, the possibility of, you know, a real kind of constitutional vacuum in Egypt, it's just hard to imagine a worse time for Egyptian troops to then be involved directly in a military operation in a neighboring country.
Well, I thank you for joining us and for filling us in on these very important stories. Sheila
These
Kirby.
Are big, complicated questions. Thanks for talking to me.
Okay. Again, thank you again, Sheila Carapico. I've been speaking with Sheila Carapico, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo and author of Civil Society in Yemen.